Hey, this is Elizabeth.
This is Keisha.
Hi, this is Leslie Sullivan, and welcome to the Mustard Seed Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the table. We are still missing Leslie, so we're not all together still. We will be someday, but all of our schedules are going crazy. We all have things going on, and it is hard to find time for everybody to meet at once. So next time she'll be with us, and we'll be able to go through, and hopefully for the rest of the year. But again, we know that sometimes we all have to miss being together, which stinks. But Keisha and I are here, and we're going to kind of continue our Women of the Bible. So our first one of the year, right? This is the first. No, we did Deborah. Just kidding. This is not our first one of the year.
Good old Deborah.
Which is fun.
How can we forget Deborah?
I know. It's so rude. We are doing her a massive disservice by all of a sudden not remembering that we had talked about her already this year. But we're moving on in succession. So today it's going to be, and I feel like I say this a lot, a little different. It's going to be a little different than before because we're going to talk about Ruth, and Ruth has her own book of the Bible. So it's kind of a combination. We're going to go through a book of the Bible, but talk about the woman it's named after. And on that topic, this is only one of two books of the entire Bible that are named after a woman.
And one of the only books in the Old Testament that is named after a Gentile.
A Gentile, and also the only book in the Bible that's named after the lineage, like that's in somebody that's in the lineage of Christ.
That's a very good point. She was a quick, great, great. Something grandmother.
There's a few greats. There's a few greats, but she's mentioned. If you take a look at Matthew 1:8 in the lineage of Christ, because Matthew, my boy, actually lists the women that are important. You know, like Tamar, Rahab, Ruth. You know, he mentions the women side of things, which I, you know, personally love because it's. You know, but again, it is still, it's important, you know, if their names are mentioned, there's a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a little spoiler alert, but hopefully not too much. But if you guys, like, as we go through this book of the Bible, I say spoiler, so like spoiler at the end of the book, but you have that Salmon was the father of Boaz, who was the mother, whose mother was Rahab. And then Boaz was the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, and then Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David. So it's awesome, first of all, to see that. I mean, that direct line straight to David.
David's grandmother, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on. Great-grandmother.
Was it great-grandmother?
Great-grandmother, because Obed's wife would have been his grandmother.
Oh. Okay, yeah.
So.
Yeah, great-grandmother.
Yeah, and so depending on times, they could have known each other.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know we talked about it with Rahab, too, is that, you know, Ruth could have, I don't, you know, it's hard to know. I wish we could have, like, a full timeline so we understand where, if they actually would have talked to each other, like, if they were actually active, like, was, you know, Salmon and Rahab actually active in Boaz's life still, like, or was he kind of now on his own, or they had already passed, or because you don't really know how old these people are. In my head, they're like 20s, 30s, you know.
Yeah. I know, which I'm sure we'll mention, because I mean, he's my go-to, Skip Hasek.
Mm-hmm.
I love his sermons. He goes into such good detail and history, but he said that they think Boaz might have been about 45. But this was going on. So.
That's not bad. So it's possible though, because, mm-hmm. you know, that his parents were still around, whether or not they were in that
yeah,
vicinity.
Ruth could have been anywhere between her, you know, 20s, early 20s to 30s.
Because she would have been younger no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Like, significantly, because that's normal.
And she was married for about 10 years before.
Okay.
She was widowed, so. And if they married about 14.
Which, again, is common.
Yeah.
For them.
So.
So. Ruth itself, as a book of the Bible, only has 85 verses and 4 chapters. We're going to go through just the first 2 tonight, because we know that a lot of times when we talk about a book of the Bible, and especially a woman of the Bible, we like to give the history and a little bit of the background, so that way we're all in the same mindset of where this was taking place and what was going on, and so why certain choices were made instead of other ones, because it's context is important to understand where you are in time, where you are, like, because we all know the Bible isn't put in chronological order. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice to kind of see where this was taking place and why and when and everything. So the book of Ruth to me, and it came to me today when I was looking at, you know, when I was looking at it this morning and trying to finalize notes and making sure I had enough to talk about to make, you know, because it's hard when it's only 2 chapters and you're like, this is only a 4 chapter book. We could do this in 1, but we want to make sure we're doing it justice too.
Yeah.
As far as, because it's a great book of the Bible, because it's an amazing redemption story. But I kind of thought it's kind of like the prodigal son a little bit, you know, where Naomi and her family kind of strayed. But when they came back to, you know, to the land of, you know, the Jews, like they were still welcomed back, you know, and provided for, and God took care of them. So it was like showing that no matter where you strayed, he still welcomes you back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very good point.
So it's commonly thought that that Ruth is set kind of within the time of the Judges. So if you're looking at the book of Judges, it's thought that this is laying right around chapter 10, right? So kind of in that area of the ruling. So it's after Joshua has passed, before Saul was crowned king, and the Israelites are experiencing a time of famine because of their disobedience to God.
And I think they think the judge Amalek was judge at this time. Don't quote me on that.
I'm like, I don't know. That sounds, I mean, we can look. So in chapter 10, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to figure out sometimes the judges in here. Abimelech would have been right around that time. Or if it's 10, it's going to be Tola. So it'd be right after Abimelech. So okay. If it goes in between 9 and 10, that's who it is. And of course I went, I'm like, then let's just stay in Judges. No, I need to go back to Ruth in my Bible.
Yeah. Who else was there?
I had also heard, and I know we talked about a little bit off before I started recording, that, and we both hadn't heard this before today, that this is like the beginning of the Bronze Age. Like when Greece was just starting to come into power and kind of becoming a known, you know, a known force. And then like the Zhou dynasty was being settled and the Mayan dynasty was kind of becoming like settled and making a name for themselves as well, which I thought was really interesting because you don't think about it like that all the time. Just where apologetics come in. That's the fun part.
Exactly.
You get to see it. You know, and it kind of puts it, when you can put it on things that we've learned, you know, in school, it makes it a little more real.
Yeah. Now I always think that's interesting. It's like when this was happening, this was happening. And this was happening, and
Because I don't know about you, but I never put, I know I didn't always, and I still sometimes obviously don't think about the history that we learned in school and the Bible coming together and being as one at the same time. I always think Bible time and then school history time, totally different. They weren't going on at the same time. You
Well, I tend to see that different too, and then it's like, oh, that was going on, this was going on.
It's just really cool to think, like, okay, so, it's just, it is, it's just really kind of, it's very interesting. Another little interesting tidbit is that in the, like, in the Jewish Bible, like in their Torah, Ruth comes right after Proverbs. So you hear about Proverbs 31, and then you get to hear about Ruth. And so it's whether intentional or unintentional, it's like you have the, you just kind of lay out what a, a woman is, a godly woman, yeah, and kind of set forth and what yours should be, and then you have
An
Ruth.
example.
Yeah, you, it's like you have the epitome of a Proverbs 31 woman.
That's cool. I didn't know that. Makes a lot of sense.
It does, and I just, it's like, I wish ours did that. It's
Yeah.
like,
It's like Proverbs 31. Ruth, it can be done.
yeah, exactly. Look. So there are three different themes of the Book of Ruth. So you have providence, whereas God takes natural events and works them for his purpose. Conversion, where you have the non-believers coming into following God, or and then you have the love and redemption. So it's like the foreshadowing of Jesus, because you have the man from Bethlehem who brings in a Gentile bride to himself. So it's like the great example of Jesus in the church and why he came.
Yeah. I like to think of the story of Ruth as just like a really awesome romantic story.
It is.
I know I mentioned it before, I work in home health, and that's one of my favorite things to ask people, how did you meet your spouse? And this is awesome. This is an awesome one.
Yeah. That's the story that, your family is being, you pass that story down a little bit.
You take out the selfishness that comes into play between two couples a lot of times. When they're, the first meeting, the getting married, marriage itself. It's like you got two individuals that seem very selfless, and it just goes together really nicely.
It does. It's like the you're showing a good marriage. This is kind of how this works. He takes care of her and she takes care of him.
Now, if I could just do that, take out the selflessness. I haven't figured that one out yet. I should pray about
I think you do a great job
that.
personally, but I think we all have our faults and it's good that we know them. It's good that I think we're all also harder on ourselves because you know that you want to be better, but yet, we're not, it's like you want to be better, but you're not there yet. Like, and that's okay. But I think you're harder on yourself, obviously, than any of us would be on you. So, Ruth is from Moab, which is an area where Jews did not mingle with their people. Moab, like Moabites, are the dependents, descendants, not dependents, of Lot and their relations that he had with his daughters, or technically that his daughters had with him, because I don't believe he was completely coherent for that. If I remember the story correctly, I think he was a little
It's a very awkward
see.
date. Don't
I
know.
don't that is a that is a story that I have never been able to fully grasp the thought process behind. It's one of the many. There are a few in the Old Testament that I'm like, okay, I understand there's probably a reason for this, but I don't understand.
There's It's one of those that I skipped over a whole lot, and then you look back, how did I miss that? Big thing. How did I miss that?
Right.
I like Noah when he got drunk and the his son yes. saw him. And yes. But anyway. So
moving on.
The nation is starting to sin. Who sinned a lot. I do believe they were... I'm sorry, I cannot remember the god that they worshipped, but they did a lot of kid sacrifice, I think.
Yes. Chemosh? I'm not 100%. Please do not nail me to the wall in regards to how we speak these ones, because I'm going off full on trying to phonetically say that.
Excuse me. Hey, sounds good to me. But not a god I would think would be a very good god to worship.
No, he's supposed to be like fierce and angry. Like, why? Who thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why, out of the lowercase g gods that they would worship, why was that one picked?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't either.
But. And why would you choose to go there? You know?
Well, I think they chose to go there because they still had food over there.
Yeah.
Because if you're going through the famine, they were trying to find somewhere that wouldn't. And maybe they're like, well, they're close enough.
Yeah.
Descendants.
Yeah.
So Naomi and her husband, who is Elimelech, you know, they lived in Bethlehem. Or Judah, and they were called Ephraimites, which is the region of Bethlehem, which is similar to what we'd refer to as like a county, like within Bethlehem. So it's like Bethlehem would be the state, you know, kind of, mm-hmm. or a major city, you know, and they had just little suburbs. So the cast of characters and their names and what they mean, because I always find that interesting, and I love that he always picks that out. Like, so you can
I do too, because you know, names back then, they meant something. Mm-hmm. They always represented something, you know. Right. kind of similar to the Native American, you know.
Yeah,
the names always meant something, and sometimes I don't know if you would want to say name that.
I'm trying to think of what book of the Bible it is. Is it Hosea, where his kids' names are not.
Oh, yeah.
They're awful.
Yeah. I don't remember what the names are, but it's like because it was a state of despair.
Yeah. It's like, I really don't know if you want to speak that kind of, like into somebody's life and they're not even hardly born.
Grow up and be like, Dad. Wasn't my fault you married a prostitute.
Right? God told you to do that. Why'd you punish me?
Why did you name me this?
Nobody's going to want to marry me. So, Elimelech means my God is king. Naomi means pleasant. Their sons are Mahlon, which means sickly. And Chilion.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. It's spelled differently. It's funny because it's spelled differently in the version of the Bible that you have.
Oh, really?
It's not like there are some where it says Chilion, and there's times when it's a KH.
Oh.
Which I found, it's just, I mean, that's like a more, yeah. The more you know moment. It's not even, it doesn't matter. I just found that interesting that it wasn't always spelled the same. Or maybe I spelled it phonetically too, but I don't believe it's always spelled the same. So, but anyway, his name means pining, weeping, and crying.
What did Skips call him? He called one crybaby and the other one. Sicko or something.
Yeah, something. And so it's like they must not have really.
Yeah.
Maybe the dad didn't. Maybe Elimelech didn't really want children.
I don't know. Poor kid.
So Orpah means fawn.
That's a pretty name.
And yeah. And then Ruth is companion in friendship. And then Boaz means swiftness.
Which I think Ruth's name really describes who she is. I think that's a good name for
I
her.
agree. And I will tell you right now that I couldn't tell you the name, what my kids' names mean. I named my kids because I liked the names.
Yeah, I don't know what mine means.
And Jack's middle name is Stephen's first name, so it's Jackson Stephen, because that's what you do in the Zill family, is the firstborn son always has the dad's first name as their middle name.
Which is cool. I think that's
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah. So it made it a lot easier for me.
Yeah.
To just be like, okay, done. That's easy. What can we say in succession that doesn't sound like a massive mouthful?
Yeah. Which we did, I don't think we did family names as well. It just wasn't until later that I realized together we have Batman Bruce Wayne.
I still love it. It's hilarious. I think it's even funnier that you didn't do it on purpose. It
Yeah.
just happened naturally.
It was probably like a month later. I was like, oh no. But Ben did try to get me to name, I don't know if it, I can't remember if it was Bruce or Wayne, John Wayne, like the cowboy John Wayne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know
Oh, see.
exactly. I know who the Duke is. We're
The
good.
Duke. He had me like, he was like, man, I think Wayne would be a great middle name. That's Dad's middle name. I was like, okay, sounds like a good strong middle name. We could do that. He goes, and Papaw's name was John. I always thought that was a good manly name. John's okay. John Wayne, no. No, we're
Yeah,
not
nope.
doing
Nope.
that.
So instead of John Wayne, you got Batman.
No, sir. Then we
Are we
got
sure he didn't do it on purpose?
Batman. He is quicker with that kind of thing than I am. It took me a month to realize we had Batman
So funny.
together. So.
It did take me a couple years before I had the gumption to be able to ask you guys, like, was that purposeful? Do we love Batman? I know people that love Batman, but
No. Yeah,
I name all my animals off of
I
like Doctor Who or Harry Potter or Narnia, so.
wasn't on purpose. And no, we didn't really have any strong fondness to Batman at all. Now, of course, after having kids, Batman became a theme, so
Of course. Well, yeah, obviously. I mean,
But what it was funny is I, which my dog that passed away not too long ago, he which I had him long before I met my husband, before we had kids. He was 12 when he passed away. He was a border collie that I remember when I went and picked him up when he was a puppy. He had a big white spot on his back. In the middle of it was a black spot. And they called him Batman
Oh,
because of
it's like
paint.
the bat signal.
Yeah. It was that little signal there on his back. Now as it grew out of it, and I changed his name. And I was like, "Ah, that's funny."
Is funny. See, they called my dog Booger Butt. That's what they that's what the that's what the shelter called him, was Booger Butt.
Oh,
I know. His name is actually now Huckleberry Finn, but yeah, Huck Finn or Huck usually. He's just usually, he knows he's in trouble if I go Huck Finn, so which is usually in the morning. So I'm like, get back inside. It's freezing. Get over here. I can't see you. It's dark, and you're probably getting into something you're not supposed to.
Like he's kind of got the personality of Huckleberry Finn.
He does very much so. He's a good dog, though.
He
I don't
is.
care what Steve says. He's a good dog. He's got his moments, but he's also still only two. So he's a puppy still. An adolescent teenage boy, for heaven's sakes. You can't expect a lot out of that.
No.
Just saying.
Ben tried to give my dog away up until my dog actually passed away.
I would have taken your dog in a heartbeat. I love Coda.
Was a good dog.
Such a good dog.
But he was really upset when Kata did get killed, so.
Yeah.
Hey.
I don't think I've ever cried over anybody else's dog. Like I cried for yours.
Good dog.
He's such a good dog.
I'm sorry. That's depressing. That's stupid.
Moving on before we all cry now. All right. So we're going to read through the first two chapters. We'll take them. We won't do it like in succession, like, but we'll take the one and we'll talk about it. And that way, if you guys want to follow along, you can, if not, and listen to it and then double check our, pronunciations or that we actually read from the Bible.
I'm making Liz do the first chapter. So I'll have to pronounce it.
It's okay. I listened to a sermon on it today, so we'll see how I do. But again, as always, we need the grace disclaimer because I am trying to read this phonetically. You know, you always see that the things where like you can't make fun of the way that somebody pronounces something because they learned it while reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you right now, Hermione was not how I said it in my head. When they did the movies, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, me neither.
that's how she wants you to say it. Okay. So now it's like, yeah, but I couldn't tell you how I pronounced it in my head, but it was not that.
There's a series of books from Francine Rivers, which you need to read. You would love this. I've got them. I'm going to give them to you to read. It's called The Mark of the Lion, but it's set in Roman period, like, I don't know, I guess like 30 years after Jesus died.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know any other names. And I'm like, that's D.
Yeah. Yep.
Her name is A.
Right?
I don't even try in my head.
Okay. Well, no, I mean, it's hard.
And my friend Becky had read them, so I was talking to her about it. And I was like, the one that starts with a D. I call him Derek. It's not, but that's what I call him.
Same kind of thing. Like, they're describing you how they look, and they're not going to look, they don't always, in my head, they look like how I want them to look. Yeah. You can tell me what color eyes they have. I don't care. I'm going to make them look different in my head. Sometimes, not always.
Yeah.
With the love interest, then, you know, sometimes they morph in your own brain.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know. All right. So, Ruth, we're going to go chapter one. In the days when the judges ruled in Israel, a severe famine came upon the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah left his home and went to live in the country of Moab, taking his wife and two sons with him. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife was Naomi, and their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrites from Bethlehem. I know I said that one wrong because there are more letters in that word than I pronounced. But anyway, they were from Bethlehem in the land of Judah, and when they reached Moab, they settled there. Then Elimelech died, and Naomi was left with her two sons. The two sons married Moabite women. One married a woman named Orpah, and the other married a woman named Ruth. But about 10 years later, both Mahlon and Chilion died, and this left Naomi alone without her two sons or her husband. Then Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had blessed his people in Judah by giving them good crops again. So Naomi and her daughters-in-law got ready to leave Moab to return to her homeland. With her two daughters-in-law, she set out from the place where she had been living, and they took the road that would lead them back to Judah. But on the way, Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back to your mother's homes, and may the Lord reward you for your kindness to your husbands and to me. May the Lord bless you with the security of another marriage." And then she kissed them goodbye, and they all broke down and wept. "No," they said, "we want to go with you to your people." But Naomi replied, "Why should you go on with me? Can I still have Can I still give birth to other sons who could grow up to be your husbands? No, my daughters return to your parents' homes, for I am too old to marry again. And even if that were possible, and I were to get married tonight and bear sons, then what? Would you wait for them to grow up and refuse to marry someone else? No, of course not, my daughters. Things are far more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord himself has raised his fist against me. And again, they wept together, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But Ruth clung tightly to Naomi. Look, Naomi said to her, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. You should do the same. But Ruth replied, don't ask me to leave you and turn back. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us. When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she said nothing more. So the two of them continued on their journey. When they came to Bethlehem, the entire town was excited by their arrival. Is this really Naomi? The woman asked. Don't call me Naomi, she responded. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made my life very bitter for me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer and the Almighty has sent such tragedy upon me? So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by her daughter-in-law, Ruth, the young Moabite woman, and they arrived in Bethlehem in the late spring at the beginning of the barley harvest. So a lot of the reason that, too, I think that she, with her husband and her sons, you know, gone, she was at risk of losing any inheritance that she would have gotten because they were no longer living.
She had no male
Mm-mm.
in her family.
And I would imagine, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, I would imagine losing your husband, because it sounds like she lost her husband before maybe even her son got mm-hmm. married. Yeah. So, like, to lose your husband, to be in a foreign land, and then having to raise your sons, and then that would be so hard.
It would be really hard.
Oh, that's, like, my biggest fear. I don't like being alone. It's scary.
No, I agree. I pray over Steven's travels, like, to work back every day, because I don't want to you can just
I do too. Pick us up really early. He wakes me up. I do not get out of the bed until he's leaving, though. I'm like, I need this little bit of time.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll start praying as I'm here and I'm getting ready for protection over him and stuff. Mm-hmm. Some bad stuff can happen.
Well, people, especially, you know, on our roads, people drive like mad anyway. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you hit, like, the main road, you can go 70 and nobody's pulling you over.
Yeah.
You know, and people are crazy, especially in the mornings.
Yeah.
What are you doing? So I also would think, and I don't know this for a fact, this is just like Liz's thought. This is not, there is nothing documented about this. And I actually tried to look it up and I couldn't find anything. But I, you know, within Jewish law, like in Leviticus and stuff, it talks about that they need to take care of the widows and the children and the foreigners. Like that's what they're called to do.
Yeah.
I would imagine that given the lowercase g god that these people have as an idol, that is not written into their doctrine of being a Moabite.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. Which, you know, it's one of those things, because, you know, the Israelites were not supposed to intermingle,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is why I find it so interesting that, you know, Ruth is our main character here. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it would be almost like technically a sin that he even married her.
Yeah.
Although my Bible, my study Bible says that there was no formal prohibition against marrying Moabites. However, it was discouraged because of their commitment to other gods.
Do you think that's because if they were descendants of Lot, that he was kind of that kind, they were still semi-protected because of Abraham?
I don't know. Kind of makes sense, don't it?
I feel like that would be the only reason where it wasn't strictly forbidden. It was just not exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, not exactly like condoned.
Yeah, it was looked down.
Because because Lot was basically like Abraham's descendant, you know, like he took care of him as a son.
Yeah. But, you know, I would imagine just the two of them making the journey back to Bethlehem
mm-hmm.
would be pretty scary. You know, they have no protection.
Right. I think that takes a faith all within,
mm-hmm.
all on their own. But that's it kind of shows Ruth's whole life, or this, especially in this beginning part, shows what exactly leaps of faith in taking them and, you know, following the discernment that you're feeling,
mm-hmm.
where that can take you, like how God can use you.
Yeah.
You know, and having faith that nothing, no harm would come to them because she's doing what God wants her to do.
You know, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, I know in the sermon that I listened to from Skip about Ruth, he was also saying how, like, because they moved to
Moab. They moved to Moab.
Mm-hmm. That was completely wrong.
Well, they are Moabites, but they were in the land of Moab.
Me in my mouth. But anyway, yeah. was a kind of a sign of not being faithful, not staying where you were, having mm-hmm. the God will provide when it was needed. But at the same time, you know, it's like, I've never been that hungry.
Yeah.
So, but having, I guess, the coming back, he said that, you know, it was like Naomi, through all this, found kind of God again. Yeah. And found her faith in God coming back. But she comes back a little bit as a bitter woman. Which, I mean, I couldn't imagine losing my husband and my two sons.
Yeah.
But it kind of, talking about that, Proverbs 31 woman, how you handle things. And
yeah,
she wants to be called Mara because the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me,
mm-hmm.
with Ruth, who's also, you know, she's in the same boat. Not only has she lost her husband, she's barren, she has no family support, and now she's in the foreign land.
Mm-hmm.
And she still has that go-getter personality.
It just shows her character, you know. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit in the story, but it shows her character that she gets up, you know, she works, she makes sure that her and Naomi are cared for and are taken care of, you know, they have provisions. And that just speaks volumes of her as a person.
Yeah.
And I know flat out I can learn just from that.
Yeah.
Alone. If that's all the story was, is to show how she cared for her mother-in-law, you know, or, you know, just how she made sure that she didn't complain. She was just making sure that she had that steadfastness to stick with what she knew was right.
Yeah.
You know, and the way that she treated people and the way that she went to work and the way that she mm-hmm. was grateful for everything. I mean, there is so much you can just learn just watching what she does. And yeah. just taking the romantic side out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot to learn. And so it's nice to kind of see the actual proverbial Proverbs 31 woman being put into action and giving us an example of what we need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And like you said, she didn't complain. And you know, thinking like she had something to complain about. She was starving. She had no clue how they were going to get the food, how they were going to do anything. It makes me think of me complaining because they added one more patient to my load.
mm. Yeah. Yep. No, I say, yeah, yeah.
Or because I had to drive a little bit farther than normal. Because, man, I could really complain about that.
It's so easy to get caught up mm-hmm. in complaints that we forget to look at the things that we have to not complain about.
Yes.
And this is me talking to me. This isn't me talking to you. You know?
I'm back there with you.
Like, I am not saying it for you. I'm saying it because I need to hear my own self say it to me. Sometimes I need a good talking to. And today is probably one of those days. But sometimes I need a good talking to. You know, like, and again, that's why your inner circle matters. Because I can go to you and say, this is how my day's been. And it's not just like, you're not sitting there and you understand, you have empathy, but you're like, okay, you know, this is what we also need to focus on instead of this.
Yeah.
You know, let's look at what God has given and what God's trying to say. And, you know, it's the, I'll pray for you. Like, and it's legitimate. It's not just like, okay, I'll pray for you. You know?
Yeah.
That's why it helps. Plus, I mean, I know it helps me get it out in a safe space too. Yeah. Cause sometimes you just need to say it out loud.
Oh yeah.
In a safe space amongst women who are going to lift you up instead of keeping you down. And mm-hmm. they're not going to stay in that pit with you. They're going to have empathy, but help bring you out of it.
Okay. And not tell you how to fix it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't need to know how to fix it.
Yeah, I just need you to listen to me complain.
Yes.
and again, when I get myself in a situation that's similar, because I still have, you know, you still go down those paths sometimes.
Oh yeah, sometimes daily for me, sometimes daily.
Yes. So in verse 14, you know, we get to be kind of, we see that, you know, there's weeping, like they're crying. There's always crying in life. And it's the direction, I read somewhere, it's like, it's the direction of which you weep, you know, that matters. So Naomi's, you know, stepped forward as she returned to God and to her people, you know, so she's weeping towards moving on, getting back on track, going back to her people, getting back to her God, our God, you know. And then you have Orpah, who is weeping, but then just kind of turns around and goes back to, you know, her familiar, her pagan gods and her family.
Yeah.
You know, and then Ruth is remaining. She remains with Naomi, and, you know, she was being obedient to the plan that God had for her, whether or not she mm-hmm. knew. But at that moment on that road, that was her conversion moment, right? That was her Paul conversion without Jesus showing up. Yeah. You know, it was her saying, I choose, you know, Yahweh, because that's what, you know, I choose your God. I choose to follow him. And, you know, sometimes it's always that newer Christian sometimes that has that drive and that passion that can reignite your own.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not empty words, you know, you could tell actions that, hey, no, this is who I choose.
Mm-hmm. So, and the fact that they returned during the barley harvest was a sign of God's provisions, because barley represents the opportunity, sustenance, hope, and the reminder of God's presence and love. Which I also didn't know, I like barley, you know?
Yeah. One of those ancient grains that's better for you.
Exactly. Thank you, Barbara O'Neill. Tell me what, when you get down that rabbit hole, it's hard to get out, and it's not like you need to get out of that rabbit hole, but it's hard to eat.
Oh, I know.
It's hard to eat bread, but you know that that's, you know, but everything. It's that progression of trying to make more food, you know.
And then it's so tiresome to try to get a healthy road. So just saying, when you figure out sourdough, please teach me. I need hands on.
So my first actual, they look like bread. I baked them. They look like bread. They're just, it's almost like they were underbaked. Like they didn't fully cook. So I probably should have left them in longer, but I don't think the starter was fully ready. Like it was, but I think I should have let it age maybe one more day and then do it again. So it's in my fridge right now, just going dormant, and I'm going to bring it out after we get back from Michigan and start again, just to kind of see. Because the bread's edible. We eat it. It's good. Like, we all ate it. And everybody agreed that it was good. It just, I knew that it needed to be a little lighter. It wasn't like dense, but it should have been cooked a little bit longer. But it also didn't rise as much. So I think that the starter itself just hadn't fully gotten there yet.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm going to try again. This is like a challenge. It's like a new challenge. Because this is not how my grandmother told me to do sourdough. Everything else I read, it makes it a lot more complicated than my grandmother told me to.
Uh-huh.
And there's probably a reason, like my grandma's bread was sometimes it was so sour, it'd give you almost like a stomach ache.
Oh, really?
So I'm wondering like if they're, because she didn't go through the whole process, that's what the difference is.
Hmm.
Steve just thinks it's just becoming more of an art form rather than a baking form. My grandma's was probably right. But I'm like, more than just bloggers and, you know, just random Joe Smoes say, this is how you do it. Like watch the Great British Baking Show all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so it shows them like how this is how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it so intimidating. I haven't even attempted.
It's been a few years, but I'm up for the challenge because I want to do it. Because it's good for you.
Yes, very good for you. I'm not even sure of my yeast bread that I do it right. I mean, it's edible. It tastes okay.
I consider it a win if we can eat it.
Yeah.
And we're not complaining too much. That's when I consider it a win.
So back to Ruth.
And back.
So barley, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I say that too to say, because, you know, we all understand and appreciate harvest seasons, right? Especially in our area, we have a lot of, we all at least have some kind of semblance of a garden in our, in our yard.
Yeah.
We all have years of which we actually get stuff out of that garden. And we have years that we get jalapenos only and cherry tomatoes only out of that garden, even though you planted lots of things. Again, speaking at me. You know, but we understand that we can relate that on a spiritual level, that regardless of what side of the harvest you're on, if you're sowing or you're reaping, but both are good and necessary. You know, you need to have the sowing of the seeds and the planting and the watering, and but then to actually get to the actual harvest part of life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard work.
It is hard work, you know, and it's, if it wasn't hard, everybody could do it. I still think everybody should. I feel like every everybody, every house, every apartment, every should have the ability.
I really feel like that lifestyle is God's plan for us.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we're on the new earth.
Yes.
I feel like that's going to be our lifestyle. Anyway, I hope so. Because I like it.
He talks about that, you know, we'll have our own vineyards and that. So I would assume that, yes, we're all going to be doing things and using the earth for which it was provided to us.
But maybe not having to fight the stinking bugs as bad.
Yeah, maybe he can leave those ones off. I feel like some bugs were probably a result of sin.
Yeah.
Like that was part of the fall. We got nasty bugs. I think that's probably where mosquitoes came from, because mosquitoes really don't have any kind of purpose.
Are these Mexican beetles that look like ladybugs?
Yes.
Going to be the death of me, because they come in the spring and summer as the little larva and they eat my green beans.
Yep.
And then they take over my house in the winter.
Those little, and they are those the ones that look like, they kind of look like seeds. They're like that white and they kind of in the shape of a seed.
Oh yeah, when they're on the leaf, like that's the egg.
Yeah,
you're talking about the egg. Yeah,
I don't know, because
underneath it, and then it's like a yellow grub, little yellow grub looking grub.
No, there was some kind of, it was like a, there was a bug, and it looked like, that's what killed my squash. Apparently, we like to go down rabbit holes tonight, so sorry y'all. But it's like what killed the little, they look like big sun, like little sunflower seeds, and I was like, what in the world are these things? And it killed, it ate my squash. And it got a couple of my pepper plants. I was able to keep my other ones. Killed my cucumbers. And it killed my big tomatoes. Because I literally only got a plethora of cherry tomatoes. It was ridiculous. I'm like, I can't even do anything with these.
Yeah.
You can't eat enough salads to make this even worth my time harvesting.
No. I don't know. It's a fight. It's a fight.
It's a fight.
I like stupid bugs. So I'm thinking we won't have those.
Yeah, I don't think the Lord would do that to us.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we're supposed to,
be happy.
Like, yeah. And I'm not happy when I have to go and I have to squeeze those little yellow grub rubs every single day. I spray organic stuff. I smell it neem oil.
Yep.
And they don't die.
No, I know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No. Don't apologize.
Can you tell? No, welcome to the battle. You like Ruth? Okay. Sorry.
Don't apologize. So. All right. Well, do you want to read chapter 2?
Okay. The meetings part of the story.
Yeah, you get, that's why you wanted it. It's like the good bit.
I do like that part. Okay. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. Darn it.
You had to say it anyway. Elimelech.
Thank you. His name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of the grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come up to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of
Elimelech.
Yeah. Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to the young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves of the reapers." So she came and she continued from early morning until now, except for the short rest. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young man not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young man have drawn. Then she fell on her face and bowed to the ground and said to him, Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? But Boaz answered her, All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and your mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward to be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Then she said, I have found favor in your ears. I found favor in your ears.
In your ears, yep.
Favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers and he passed her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundle of her, and leave it, bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. I probably didn't say that right, but and she took it up and went to the city. Her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law that whom she had worked and said, The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness have not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi also said to her, The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite said, Besides, he said to me, You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, It is good, my daughter, that you go out with the young women, with his young women, lest in another field you may be assaulted. So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
So neither of the Bibles that I have sitting here say the word that you were trying to say.
Mine's the ESV version, so it's...
Yeah, because I have Christian Standard and I have our NLT. Because mine says it filled an entire basket, like the NLT, so that's what it says. In the Christian Standard, it says it was about 26 quarts of barley.
This says an eif of barley. I know I'm not saying that right, but it's about 5.5 gallons or 22 liters. At least a 2-week supply for the two women.
Hey.
So.
It's always interesting. It's that, again, like we talked about earlier, it's that love story. She just happened to be on his land. He just happened to see her because he was visiting that day.
Yeah.
Right? It's just God's plan coming into fruition because he knows that he needs them for his ultimate plan.
Yeah, exactly. And it's using everyday situation to have God's plan come out.
Yeah.
I found it fascinating that their lunch was just roasted grain.
That sounds like a very nice lunch. I like grain. And wine. She was dipping it.
Yeah.
So that sounds like maybe we should adopt that as a diet plan.
Yeah.
Because it's biblical.
Yeah, exactly. You take out my chocolate, I'm bound to lose some weight.
Right. But again, you're still seeing that that Levitical law is coming through because he's taking care of the foreigner. And mm-hmm. she's also a widow, you yep. know. But, I mean, so she kind of she checks off a few of those things. So it just shows that he is a godly man because he's following the law of Moses.
Yes.
And obviously he was extremely wealthy. So God is blessing him. So you know that he wouldn't be like that if God wasn't blessing him.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't, he's a good dude mm-hmm. because of the things that God has provided him. And God is now providing him Ruth.
And you could tell that he's good because of how the workers greeted him. Too,
yes.
You know? But,
how the yeah. workers greeted him, how he made sure that nobody would touch her, uh-huh. how he made yeah. sure that she was then provided for, but just that she was safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even just providing the provisions of food. It's just her safety.
Yeah. And I like how she caught his eye before he yeah. knew who she was. He's like, ooh, who is this woman over here?
Right. I mean, it's the big teller is, or one of, but, you know, when he has her drink the water that the men have drawn, you know, he doesn't say, if you draw the water for the men, you can have some too. Yeah. He's like, no, they're going to draw it and you can drink from it. When yeah. in that custom, like in that, you know, time period, it was the women, the slaves, the foreigners who drew the water for the workers, for the men. So at that moment, Boaz is pretty much offering her the water that was by doing this, he's placing her above like almost all the women that are there, and yeah. he's putting her on the same level as these men.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So if his intentions were not clear, they were now.
Exactly. And then it also just shows this chapter shows Ruth's character too, because, you know, that's not easy to mm-mm. go out. I mean, it's not easy now with as much technology we have to go out, you know, mm-hmm. to glean these fields and stuff. You know, farmers now have big tractors and combines who will separate the mm-hmm. seeds and stuff, but they were doing it all by hand. And I think it was about 25% that they would leave behind for the poor.
Mm-hmm. Like so, tithing.
Mm-hmm.
Which in a tithing is only 10, but still, it's kind of like.
Yeah. And then, you know, it wasn't like they would just get the handout. They had to work for it.
Yeah.
You know, you had to go. And I mean, it's hard work, but he even wanted to make sure he left extra for Ruth.
Yeah. I mean, he's providing her, again, that the redemption. Like, I understand that you're from there, but everything that you've shown is in line with what God would have you do, have us do. So he's providing her with a grace,
mm-hmm.
you know, that he can love her regardless of her past, which is what Jesus does for us.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So. I like to think that they had just a wonderful marriage.
Yes, right? I mean, they have such a great beginning. You know, it's you know God blessed it because he wouldn't have had the line of David come from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did hear, and I apologize in advance if I kill this, but Doug had talked about when, you know, he has a devotional on his, you know, that he reads through. And I don't know if he's still doing it. I know he had finished it because, and I know that's just because my dad also bought it, so we have it here. But he had said, you know, when you talk about David, that David's dad didn't want him, you know, and yeah. that basically because of the number of sons that he already had, that David was basically a curse. And it was a curse because of the ancestors marrying, one of his ancestors marrying a foreigner. So he felt like his family, like they weren't past the curse yet. You know, and so
completion.
And so he knew so basically that's why David was already like always away from his brothers. His brothers weren't really massive fans of him. And it's not really ever spelled out like it is for Joseph, but it's, you know, it's implied, you know, and, but yet God showed them. He's like, there's no curse. You guys are full of it because I'm going to use this man and he's going to be our king. Like this is like a curse breaker right here.
Yeah.
Like you guys are just superstitious ninnies. Yeah.
Because God set it up. He set it up for them to marry foreigners.
Yes.
So. And Boaz didn't have a problem with it.
I would think that she must have been, I mean, I would think she was also like very, like it's beautiful, but I always picture her as like girl next door beautiful. I don't picture her as drop dead celebrity.
Like,
you know, she's you, she's me, she's somebody that, you know, you just, not,
and you know, she speaks a lot. Exactly.
You know, but according, so in verse 20, it's, you know, Naomi mentions that Boaz was a close relative and a family redeemer. So the concept of that actually comes from the Hebrew term goel, which means kinsman redeemer. So that's kind of found like in Leviticus, if you turn to chapter 25, verse 25, it says, if one of your fellow Israelites fall into poverty and is forced to sell some family land, then a close relative should buy it back for him. And that would be kind of what the Redeemer was. And then if you look through same chapter in 47, when it says, suppose a foreigner or a temporary resident becomes rich while living among you, if any of your fellow Israelites fall into poverty and are forced to sell themselves to such a foreigner, to a member of his family, they still retain the right to be bought back. Even after they have been purchased, they may be bought back by a brother, an uncle, or a cousin. In fact, anyone from the extended family may buy them back. They may also redeem themselves if they have prospered. So that's where him being a family redeemer would fall. So it was basically a, you know, a close relative that was to ensure the economic like well-being of a relative, and was pretty instrumental when it came to a person, you know, that was incapable of giving themselves out of crisis.
Yeah.
So it was designed to maintain the wholeness of a healthy family relationship even after the person had died, which I think is great.
Yeah, definitely.
But backtracking to Siskosh, because I highlighted this while you were reading it, because so in Ruth 2, verse 12, I liked the way kind of the NLT kind of breaks it down, where Boaz is telling her like, hey, I know what you've done. I know exactly what you did. And, you know, and he said, may the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you have done. And that just paints such a beautiful picture and phrase that I'm like, I like the way that just kind of, the way that it said it. It was like, just, you're underneath his wings. You're taking refuge underneath God's wings.
Uh-huh.
And you almost like rest. You can rest in him and he's going to fully provide you what you need.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like that too.
So I know we only went through the first two chapters, and I know it's a lot of information that I think we've thrown at everybody. Do you have anything else before we?
I would say that I always like Ruth, but study it this time around, I have more appreciation for her.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite things, because I know we covered Ruth last year, or actually almost 2 years if it wasn't last year, it was the end of the year before. Because I know when we first started the women's ministry, we started with James, and I feel like we went right from James into Ruth.
Yeah.
But, you know, even in that time, in that span, it's like it hasn't been that long that I've studied her, but it's been long enough to where, A, some of the things I forgot and other things are coming to light that I didn't see last time.
Yeah.
It's that whole living Bible, right? You know, it's the same story, but it speaks different.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Which I found so fascinating.
It is. And that's one thing I like sitting here with you and sitting here when Leslie's with us and, you know, going to women's ministry and talking, you know, with our friends about stuff like this, and even, you know, talking with our husbands when they're around. But, you know, sometimes it's like, I don't want to listen to you because I listen to you all the time. But, you know, but getting their perspective and having a conversation about, because you learn new things. I learn new things every time Steve and I, you know, talk about books of the Bible or people in the Bible. You know, I get his perspective, which sometimes sheds light on a situation, or I can ask him like, well, what would you think about this? Or, you know, the same thing. We sit here and you have insights that I didn't even, you know, I wouldn't have even thought of. And I think that's important, and why you know, just because you've read through the Bible once, which I will, full disclaimer, I've never read the Bible from cover to cover, never done it. There's books in this Bible I don't think I've ever read a single word in, unless somebody has done a sermon on it. You know,
I've read it through one time, but honestly it was to read it through one time.
Yeah, it was a checklist thing.
Mm-hmm, it was a checklist thing. So,
and I think there is goods and bads on all sides. Yeah. I'm a big checklist person. I love a good checklist because it makes me feel accomplished to check it off, you know, and to highlight this. I've gone through this book of the Bible, highlight, you know, but because God still works in that, you know, he can still work in that.
Oh, definitely.
He can work in the one verse you read a day or in the 15 verses you read a day.
Yeah, exactly. Like our pastor, he says he reads until God shows him a verse, and then he meditates on that verse all day.
Mm-hmm. Which would drive my schedule brain crazy to do it like that, because it's like I'm either sitting here for 5 minutes maybe or 2 hours, Lord. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But I like that idea that you're reading, and then, or if you have it, like if I have a, say, well, I'm going to try to read verses 1 through 5 today, right? And then in verse 2, you get that one verse that is just like, oh, wait a minute. So then your time's, you know, cut short, but it's like God, you got to go where God's guiding you and what he's talking to you about.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So next time when we crack open the book of Ruth, we'll go through chapters 3 and 4, and it'll be a little shorter than this one, because it's, you know, we might have to do a brief little, hey, this is where we still are, you know, but this is going to be in 2 weeks. So it's not like it's going to be much in between, but you know, it might be a little shorter, but it's still, we got the good bit coming, still the good part of the story, the actual redemption part of the story is coming up.
Yeah.
And we are definitely looking forward to it. And if everything goes to plan, we'll all be together and we'll all be doing it together.
We miss Leslie.
We do.
<I'm> very busy.
So, but we will see everybody next time. We want to thank you all for listening to the Mustard Seed Podcast and for joining us on this journey that God laid on our hearts. I know it's hard to feel connected when we are on this side of the microphone, so we wanted to make sure that you knew that you could connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at the Mustard Seed Podcast. Our Facebook group is a community. We share funny memes, Bible verses, and just life.
You can reach out however you feel comfortable. We want to build the community that we advocate for on this podcast, the Come As You Are. Our table will never be too crowded and cannot get too big. You belong here, and we want to connect with you.